welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Editor. Today we have a fabulous film, and both the director, writer, producer, and maybe even caterer, but I'm sure they'll tell us about it. Paul and Angie from Streets of Vengeance are here. Thank you for coming. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having us.
So I've never had a husband and wife team on, so we got to start right there.
Yeah, I mean, we met in film school. I was in the Lab Aid.
In film school you guys met?
Yeah. In 2004.
In college.
Yeah.
I wandered into film class just because I was bored and not knowing what I wanted to major in life. So I took some film classes. Paul was there. It was already his passion. And I was just like, I'm going to just follow you and do whatever you want to do. Let's just make some movies together.
That's so then, cute.
Then we developed a relationship. And then, you know, we didn't make films for, you know, a long time after that. And we started making films together as a real team, A&P Productions, for the 10 years from 2010.
Yeah.
When we started.
So, okay. Well, I was more going to ask about your production work on this film. Do you guys decide who does what ahead of time, or is it all collaborative?
I will be the writer. I'll come up with the concept. I was allowed to watch horror movies and thrillers when I was a kid, and Angie was not. You know, she was very sheltered. She couldn't even watch The Simpsons.
My mom was super strict.
Yeah. So I'm the one that has the love for the 80s sleazy, you know, Cinemax 90s late night movies.
But I did grow up in the 80s, so I get the vibes, and I understand everything about VHS. I lived all renting VHS tapes just like everybody else in the 80s, mm-hmm. and we both share that.
I can't give you that yet. We got to back this up. You weren't allowed to watch The Simpsons or horror movies.
No, because my mom thought Bart was like a smart aleck. She thought he had a bad attitude towards his parents, so she didn't want us to get like bad influence.
Okay, I want to back this up. So you're saying, I understand you went to the video store. I mean, Paul's picking up like, I don't know, camp cheerleader murders or alligator. What are you picking up at this time?
Pretty much everything Disney, Care Bears, She-Ra, He-Man, like all the other Ninja Turtles, like all the other stuff that was like child proof, yeah. Like, okay for kids.
Yeah, so we shared that, you know, we had that in common. We were watching the Goonies.
Okay. I'm just thinking, you guys, you go from this to your film Streets of Vengeance, which is like a hardcore 80s VHS rental.
Yeah, Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was my inspirations. And so I wrote that out and I brought it to Angie to read, and, you know, just like on our other films, all films, our processes, she'll go through and review it. And we'll talk it over and she'll edit, she'll take things out, add things in, that need to be to flesh it out, you know, things like that. And also, you know, bring things grounded into reality because, you know, I tend to go all over here with kicking someone's head off or something. Then she'll be like, I don't know if we can do that. Not right now.
Paul's writing is writing like million-dollar checks that we can't cash, so I have to like bring them down back into like reality a little bit.
Yeah, we
got to
ground it. Yeah, so that's our, you know, she does that for me and for us, for our film. So.
Okay, well, we're going to have to ask, has your mom seen this film?
Yes.
She was at the premiere.
Yeah. I warned her ahead of time. I'm like, there is a lot of boobies. There's a lot of stabbing. There's a lot of blood. I mean, she's over it.
Yeah.
I mean, what's she going to do?
Yeah.
Drown me?
Right. Exactly.
I grew up to be a little rebel after all, even through all the Disney childhood. I'm now making Streets of Vengeance and Slash Party, so I think I'm surprised myself as well.
Yeah.
So, Paul, you're the director, right? Angie, you're just sort of more behind the scenes?
I do write it. Like I said, she does the reviews and edits the script. She's the producer. She also picks out the wardrobe, the art direction during the production, help with location, scheduling, And then in post-production, you know, I obviously, you know, show her the rough cut and she'll say, do this, do that. So it is really, you know, a film making team. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we both went to film school. So technically, if I needed to, I could shoot a camera. I could edit film footage. I could do sound. I often hold mics on set because we're cheap like that and do stuff ourselves.
Yeah.
But for the writing and editing, typically Paul takes like a lead role in that. I'm more of like a support and
directing
as well. But at any time we make the plans together. So if he needs to step away for a quick second, anyone on the set can ask me the same exact question and we'll get the same answer. Right. So if he needed to step out, I could easily step in and we have the same exact vision and everything would go on.
Yeah. And as a producer, you know, she keeps us on time. Like if we're running too long on the scenes, like this is just going on too long, but we need to stop and like get on to the next one. She's good for that. Also, you know, it's like, if I don't know what to do and I need to defer to her, like I need to make a decision, I always ask her, you know, we always talk it over. Like, should we just wrap this up? Or you think we should send this person home? Are we going to get to them today? You know, things like that have come up, you know.
It's like a big problem solver.
Yeah. And that's what filmmaking is ultimately, is problem solving.
Okay.
So I feel lucky.
I do want to discuss wardrobe. I did listen to you. How did you decide on the wardrobe for this? Because, I mean, you have clothes I don't normally see in film.
I love that you're asking about this because it's often an overlooked thing, especially in independent film when you don't really have much of a budget to work with.
Well, that's what I was getting at. That's where I was going. You got it.
So I'm so happy you brought this up.
Yes.
So wardrobe is one of the things I'm super passionate about. I don't know if it's cliche just because I'm a woman, but I love clothes and fashion. But also, like I said, I grew up in the 80s, so I completely understand the vibes of what the aesthetic of what people were wearing then, because some of the outfits that the girls were wearing is stuff that I wore when I was in the 80s as a kid. So it took me a while. I definitely take my time with stuff because I'm very picky, but I'm also very cheap. So there was a lot of like thrifting, a lot of like vintage stores. So some of the items in the movie are literal vintage, like from the 80s items. And some of the other things, I just really took my time and just went everywhere. Like every store that's in like a 50-mile radius, I probably went there and Paul got to like tag along and look at every single shirt in this county. And until I picked something that really gave that 80s feel, like something that you would have seen, not necessarily that like everything had to be from the 80s, but we just wanted it to feel like, this really reminds me of the 80s.
Yeah.
That's what we were really going for.
Yeah, it was a big priority, a huge priority for the movie.
Yeah, down to the accessories, like little boots, the little gloves, like the big side hair bows, like the rainbow striped shirts, short shorts, all that stuff. It was so fun. So fun.
So is Mila's green just then vintage, or is it something new?
That's new.
Because
the green.
Oh, Streets of Vengeance?
Yeah, we're talking about Streets of Vengeance.
Oh, we're talking about Streets of Vengeance. I thought we were talking about Shelter Party. Streets of Vengeance. Okay, so that same thing, stores everywhere, vintage shopping. Mila's clothes. Okay, this is going to be even more interesting. So for Streets of Vengeance, I think I hit up every adult store in the county. And it was a lot of lingerie shopping because a lot of the pieces were like fishnets and like sexy pieces. I mean, it's set in the adult film industry, so a lot of the stuff is stuff that adult film stars would wear. Mila's green dress is something that is current. It wasn't vintage, but I found that in an adult film store somewhere on your
I think we had to order from stripper discount.
I shopped a lot on stripperdiscount.com.
Yeah.
For that movie.
I've never heard of that.
Me either, but I found it.
Because, you know, we were, you know, obviously wanted to have things, you know, for the adult film stars to wear, the characters that they play. So we'd have to go to adult film stores. And, you know, we're doing that for wardrobe, but, you know, like we're in what am I trying to call it? Not adult film store, but
adult store.
Sex shop. We're in a sex shop looking for wardrobe, and then someone we know walks in, and I'm like, "Hey, what are you doing here?"
And I was like, "Don't ask them that."
Like, oh yeah,
we're here shopping for the movie. Yeah. But don't ask them what they're doing.
They're here for something else. But
yeah, oh no, you do ask them why they're there, because 100%, I would. My buddy walks in, I'm like, "So what are you getting today?" 100%, absolutely right answer.
Oh, a lube. Oh, okay.
It was so awkward. Sorry. I was like, don't ask them if you're ever an adult, like a sex store, ask people what they're doing.
Yeah, I was out of habit.
I'm with you. I would have done the same thing. You use a lot of green screen. Is that because of a budgetary reasons or you wanted the green screen for effects?
To be honest, I only remember using the green screen
for the news segment.
Yeah, for the new segment, for the girl that gets killed with the sword, and then
You also use it a lot to change the store names. The store names are all changed, I've noticed, on your covered shots.
No. You
definitely use those are real names? I thought they were digitally affected changes.
No, all that is real.
My bad then.
Yeah, no, okay.
And I was like, I
don't
remember using.
Totally my bad then. See, look, this is why we have these conversations. So you can say, nope, I'm an idiot. Yeah, I missed that. Yeah, how big an Avira fan are you two?
For me, for sure. You know, I used to rent the VHS tape all the time. But mostly because, you know, mostly I would watch a USAF All Night with Ron Beshear. And so she was the host for me every Friday and Saturday night. And that's why we have that wraparound with All Night Long. I love horror hosts.
Yeah, we're big fans of strong, independent, confident women. Mm-hmm. So she fits the bill.
Well, right, I think that comes through on your film. I mean, Mila is a very strong, independent woman. And maybe that's your Angie touching on Paul's imagination and fixing the script and making her stronger. So did you work on that part while you were writing it, making Mila a stronger character as you went?
100%. I mean, it's one of the main things that we focus on when we write our stories. So like I said, Paul does the main like technical writing of the script, but the stories we discuss in depth together before he even sits down to type stuff out. So we share ideas together about characters, about stories, about where we want to see the characters go and what we want to see happen to them and what we want to see them overcome. And oftentimes in a lot of our films, it's a common theme that there will be a very strong, confident, and independent woman, even if she's making terrible choices, she's very much in control of her own life. And that is definitely a strong theme in our film. So thanks for noticing that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very big priority for us. You know, she doesn't have to be perfect. You know, we didn't want her to be perfect. I mean, in fact, that was kind of the reason why I wanted to do a female revenge movie. That's how it started, the inception. You know, most female revenge movies, you know, the person is very pure, you know, a student or a nurse or something like that. And I thought having her being an adult film star would, you know, add a layer of complication for some people who may not, you know, identify or relate to an adult film star or see her.
Have a hard time feeling a little bit of sympathy.
Sympathy or having a judgment upon her, you know, things like that.
Because of her occupation.
Yeah. And so we thought that was really cool, you know, to try to explore. Because, I mean, there's like a whole subgenre, like stripper and peril movies, too. And like, oh, you know, that's been done. Let's try, you know, a little something else. That's a kind of akin, you know, adjacent to that kind of a lifestyle.
Okay. I just want people to know this is an adult film and does contain nudity. So just so they know before I ask my next question. Mm-hmm. Angie, when you're reading the script, being a woman, do you care there's a lot of nudity? I didn't see any male nudity and I was looking for it. So I want to go, it's got to be equal to me. And I didn't feel it was equal here. Yeah, thanks for the woman nudity, but shouldn't you feel there's some male nudity that was needed?
Well, I mean, no offense, sorry, boys, but typically people want to see the ladies, not so much the guys. We do want to be a little bit more equal opportunity. So who knows? Maybe in the next ones we'll write in some males, more focus on male nudity. I don't know. But as far as the women.
You have shirtless dudes, topless guys.
Well, the jerk is a little topless, a little too much.
One guy. I mean, you saw his ass when he got punched.
Yeah,
and he started rolling on the ground.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, there may be some people that like
it's a movie.
Maybe so, if the fans, you know, start asking for
it. Yeah, there's a demand.
Yeah, if there's a demand, I'll listen. We'll build it.
Okay, good. As long as you're good for listening, I think we're all good with me.
You guys want more male nudity? Holla at me. Get at
so,
me.
Right. Casting this film, obviously, with a lot of nudity. And I mean, I would say it's over nudity, but it makes sense when it shows up. I had no issues. Obviously, you also needed to get views. I get that. I'm not fighting with you. You need your views. If you don't have it, you're probably not getting views in this film. Let's be honest. So how is casting for that? I mean, obviously, you tell them there's going to be nudity, but certain people don't show their boobs. Was that always planned, or some people say no, and you're like, okay, well, we can put you in this role instead. So I'll let you work with that.
Yeah.
100%. It's 100% upfront. So usually when we know there's going to be nudity, we don't even ask the actors, quote unquote. We usually look for professionals that already work in that industry because that's what they do for a living anyway. Yeah. So
oh, okay.
The people that we hired to do the nudity are like OnlyFans girls, or they're nude models, or they're women who do like webcam work. So that's they're already comfortable with that. Yeah. They're familiar with that. And we've never asked an actor to do nudity. Mm-hmm. We've had actors offer, but that's completely up to them. We would never ask like a regular actor to like go nude. I mean, we absolutely would not pressure somebody to do anything that they weren't comfortable with. But yeah, so that's why we don't even bother asking them. We just go straight to like OnlyFans or webcam people, and they know upfront exactly like what we're asking for, so that there's no surprises. And usually it's them being like, oh, do you want more? Because I could do this. And we're like, whoa,
yeah,
all we need is like some like shirtless stuff. We don't need all the other.
Yeah, because even though, I mean, yeah, the main character, I mean, that's been a gripe of some people, that she has no nude scenes. I mean, she has like partial nude scenes where she's covering herself, which I think is good enough. I mean, that wasn't written to the script, so it wasn't expected. But yeah, for the nude scenes, they were professionals, they were pros, they were actual adult film stars. And, you know, some of them weren't written into the script. We actually had a chance to work with them. An opportunity came up. It was like, oh, well, let's try to get them in a cameo, you know, like Joanna Angel. And even Ginger Lynn came up later into the process. And it just seemed like if we're making a film set in the adult film world, I mean, one, it does have to have some nudity. Maybe two, maybe it should have some adult film star cameos. And so those are things we didn't plan in the beginning because we're so low budget. We're so, you know, in the middle of nowhere. We don't know anybody. But now we know them. Now we're friends with them. But that's not how it started, because we didn't think we could do that. And this is our first movie with nudity. Like, we haven't done anything like this before. And then subsequently, Slash Art Party, the movie we made after this, has a nude scene. But compared to Streets of Vengeance, it's, like, very tame. And going on forward, there's not going to be a lot more, you know, going far in other movies, just because, like I said, it was the subject matter of Streets of Vengeance that kind of required it in a way. And, you know, and it fit the tone and the vibe.
Right. So since it was set in the adult film world, the adult film stars were the ones that were doing the movie. So
yeah, most of them.
It made sense.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to go back to Ginger Lynn. So the Ginger Lynn scene, she's only in about three scenes. Was that written just for Ginger Lynn, or did you have somebody else cast for that role beforehand? If she came on late to the project.
That was written for her because there was a moment I had seen an interview with Ginger Lynn, and she was talking about like trying out like mainstream movies and how she did the music video for Metallica and stuff. And at the end, whoever's interviewing her had put her email address and said that she's wanting to do more mainstream work. And so I was talking to Angie. I was like, because Ginger Lynn, I'll back it up. The way Mila is dressed on the cover of Streets of Vengeance, we took inspiration from Ginger Lynn's cover of New Wave Hookers. A friend of mine had a VHS tape and he posted it on his Instagram. And I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. And I thought, what if someone had made a movie with that cover, but it wasn't a porn film. It was like a Brian De Palma erotic thriller. And I thought, oh, that would be kind of cool. It was like a giallo or something, but with that same clothes and that same aesthetic. And so that's what we used when we started finding wardrobe for the characters. So if I were using Ginger Lynn as kind of the basis, the beginnings of the whole aesthetic of the movie, it's like, well, why don't we get the real Ginger Lynn in the movie?
For
and,
a show, yeah.
And I was like, mind blown. I was like, well, can we do that? I don't know.
Let's just ask and see what she says.
Yeah, Angie's like, just ask her. Like, what's the worst that can happen? And I was
and then she said yes.
Yes. Yeah, she said yeah. And she liked the script. She wanted to talk to me on the phone and we spoke, and I was nervous because I knew her from Vice Academy movies and stuff. I was like, wow, this is Ginger Lynn. And she really liked it and she wanted to be a part of it. And then now we've become friends since then and stayed at her house. She knitted us a blanket. She was in Slasherette Party. She's going to be in our next one, pretty sure. We got talked on the phone like last week. So it's really crazy how it started.
It's
so
crazy. She's really crazy. Now become like a friend.
Yeah, a great
That's
friend.
Awesome,
great friend. We
though.
Love her.
See what happens when you ask people to do things?
You never know.
So that's a big lesson. You know, just try.
Shoot your shot.
Shoot your shot.
You never know.
Exactly.
How was your experience working with blood in this film? I mean, I always like blood stories because everybody has one.
Oh my gosh.
Blood. Well.
Well, okay. So basically.
Yeah, you got it.
In our house, because we're so low budget, we've shot so many scenes in the different rooms in our house. And I can say that little splatters have ended up in every single little stains of from our house. We're going to replace the floors anyway, so who cares? And the testing that we've done with blood has gotten everywhere. I don't think there's like a pair of shoes or anything in our garage that has not had a little splatter of fake blood on it. When we were testing for Slasherette Party, Paul was using a water cannon and was like messing around with it in the backyard, and our whole backyard fence got sprayed with fake blood. Oh my gosh, it's everywhere.
They've cleaned up most of it. But, you know, in Streets of Vengeance, there's an eyeball gag, you know, and so that eyeball, like, you know, Angie will find it sometimes in a drawer or something, or a severed hand or something, you know. So.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I think we did pretty good with the blood. It's because, like, we were on location for a lot of places, too. So, like, the strip club scene where the penis gets cut off, you know, we had plastic drop cloths on the floor so it wouldn't mess up the establishment, you know. We're in a house, you know.
I don't know if it's, like, a good thing to admit, but I feel like I could be, like, a crime scene cleaner now because I'm so used to, like, oh, all these characters died, and I got to go clean up all the mess, like all the fake blood and stuff. So I feel like I've gotten pretty fast at like getting rid of the evidence, so to speak.
And yeah, you know, and that's something. If any low budget filmmakers are listening, like, you know, you want to take an arsenal, you know, a package of cleaning products to prepare for
a
cleanup.
Lot of cleanup.
You don't want anyone else to do it. You got to do it.
You brought up locations, so on my list, let's get into locations. I have a strip club I would like to talk about. Did you walk into the strip club and say, hey, I want to rent this? Did they give it to you for free? How does that work?
Actually, that was our friend Steven Pettit. When we did this movie, you know, I rented locations that we did not have, you know, access to. And I didn't know how we were going to get. I just figured we would figure it out somehow.
Yeah.
And so, thankfully, you know, if you have some resourceful friends, you can ask, hey, do you think... You know, do you know someone like a phone or something that can help? And he said, yeah, I do. I didn't ask how he knew, but I was like, all right, no questions asked. And the guy let us shoot there for free. And it was really, really nice. We shot there for a few hours. Like I said, we had to clean up and, you know, get in and get out. But there's very, very nice, very, very nice to us. We got quite a few locations for free.
Yeah, friends of friends are always hooking us up with someone that they know, just like the club scene where Mila like gets kind of like drugged out, or her drink gets kind of messed with.
Yeah,
That club was, again, a friend knew the owner of that club, and actually, it was a different person. So we got that connection for free, and they were even pouring drinks for free, and we're like, whoa, you don't have to do all that. We just the inside is cool enough. The mansion was a friend of a friend, and so just a lot of friends of friends find out that we're making a movie. And usually that alone is like, oh, you're making a movie? Can I be there and just like watch? And we're like, sure. So we've been able to get a
mansion.
Lot of,
you, guys need a mansion? It's like, yeah. Well, I didn't need one before, but yeah, now I do. So like a mansion was not written in the script, but now it will be. I'll rewrite it. And that's what it takes. You know?
So we've been very, very lucky to get connections to locations for free because of friends of friends. So very fortunate.
Very, very fortunate.
So whose Mustang? Was that a free rental?
Let's go. So we just rented right from, I think it was right next to the airport.
Yeah.
So we did ask, like, we made a selection because we wanted her to drive a convertible, fun, like, youthful car. Mm-hmm. So that was a rental, and it was super fun to drive it around San Francisco for the day.
Excellent. How is shooting in the car? Because you do some shooting in the car. Obviously, you shoot the car, and I know you're in the car at one point shooting while it's moving. Mm-hmm. So were there some issues with that?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty fun. I think it was just Angie and our cinematographer, Dan, and Delana. We just sent them because, you know, it wasn't enough room for everybody. Like, okay, just go ahead and drive up and down the coast and get some shots of the sun and shots of the beach. And they pulled over and they did their thing. So that was pretty cool. Angie really wanted us to get the Golden Gate Bridge in the shot somehow. So that I actually shot that little part with her. But yeah, it was real fun driving around shooting. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we used to do back in our film school days.
Yeah, there were certain locations that we for sure wanted to get like a shot of. So me and Dan crouched in the back seat and I was basically like, oh, point at that. Can we pull over right here and like get a shot of her looking at the beach? Mm-hmm. And can we rush up to Twin Peaks really quick and get that sunset up the top for sitting on the car? So San Francisco is like my second home and there were certain spots that I just loved there. So I tried to squeeze those in and have her drive the convertible around my favorite spots.
Yeah, because it was really important to us to have San Francisco because it's set in San Francisco. But, you know, a lot of movies, they can't shoot in these big cities. So they'll just say, oh, it's set in Las Vegas, but I'm really shooting in, you know, the Midwest or something.
Yeah, most people use like stock footage or something. But it was important to us to actually go there and shoot there.
And we're so close. So it's like, we got it.
Yeah, so maybe you could help. Mila does a walk with lots of artwork on the walls. Where is that?
Oh my gosh. You're bringing up all my favorite stuff. I love this. Yeah. So that is a place in San Francisco. It's in the Mission District. That alley is called Clarion Alley, and it is very popular in the city for artists. So a lot of street artists, or just a lot of artists in general, will go there and they just put up like either really huge pieces. Sometimes there's just a lot of little pieces, but it's everything in the alley is painted. Yeah. The ground, the fence, the walls, there's stuff
the
hanging.
The ground is painted? I got to rewatch that scene and see if the ground is painted.
Yeah.
Some chalk art.
There's some
paintings
on the ground. But that alley in particular, it draws a lot of attention from people who are interested in art. And it's one of my favorite places to go because they're always rotating new pieces and you can see like new artists arrive on the scene. They'll start putting their name out. And I love that spot. And I was so interested in having Mila be interested in art. And so we thought, oh, we should have her walk down Clarion Alley and sneak in that little extra bit for myself. Cause I don't know anyone that knows that place, but I just thought it would be a really cool spot to showcase in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like that part wasn't really actually so much in the script as far as her being like an artist, but she just always wanted to leave and go do something else. So like our films tend to be kind of organic where we'll add layers and stuff as we go along. And once we know the characters more, you know, because you get to learn the character more than after you write it, like they take a life on their own in the script, but they take an even bigger life on their own once you have an actor portraying them and you shoot them and you light them and stuff. So, yeah, it's very organic. It evolves, I suppose.
Okay. So who did Mila's painting sentences if she didn't do them herself, obviously?
So those are actually mine. I'm a huge art fan, and I love all my downtime to paint. I mean, I don't really do anything specific as far as like I couldn't paint a person, but I just like doing a lot of abstract stuff and anything that's bright and colorful, I love it. So a lot of the paintings that she had were just little doodles and things that I had done over the years, And I just threw them in the car. We drove to San Francisco, and then we're like, here, let's set out all of my paintings and, you know, set them up on the dock and show you off as an artist. Funny fact, Ginger Lynn is also an artist. So she's a huge painter herself. And in her house, her all her walls are just covered in paintings of stuff that she's done. And we have very similar tastes in like art and anything colorful and vibrant and crazy we love. So I'm so glad that those, we were just surrounded by a lot of art in the movie. We were able to squeeze it in there.
Yeah, that was cool.
Okay, I want to discuss some lighting effects. Were you, I'm going to get in trouble here. Well, my wife never hears this. Were you looking for an 80s adult film lighting? A lot of it, I felt.
I mean, mostly, it's. I mean, I guess you could characterize it as MTV lighting, you know, with like the colored gels and stuff like that.
Yes.
Like 80s sex scenes in movies.
Yeah, like exactly. The sex scenes in the movies, like where the scene between Amber and Rico. That's totally from Lost Boys or, you know, some sort of music video.
Where I don't like think, heavy smoke and, yes. Like, yes.
And sweat and yeah, all that kind of stuff. Oh yeah. So yeah, it's more MTV, more sex scenes from movies, not so much adult films as, you know, there aren't really, you know, the lighting in adult films aren't great at all. So we got to make it look cool, you know, so it's a lot of smoke colored gels, which is, you know, what we're going for.
Yeah.
Okay, don't worry. I didn't forget to discuss music. I always like to do it at the end. Music. I mean, lots of it. Lots and lots and lots of music. I mean, I really definitely felt the times it was an 80s homage. Is that what you were going for?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, for sure. The music came from quite a few artists. One was the Salacious Wizard Cult, which are from our town of Modesto. The Grind Theory, he's out of New York. And I think there was another one from the UK. I forget his name. London Lasers, I want to say his name was.
I think
you're
right.
But the majority of the music comes from Vestron Vulture. And he's our friend, Dante. He's from Mexico. And he's been working with us since Cinco de Mayo. That was our first feature film. And he's a young dude, but he loves all this synth wave, 80s, Miami Vice, Giorgio Moroder music. And it was perfect. You know, John Carpenter, James Cameron music. So I sent him the movie and I told him what kind of song I wanted. And I wanted something kind of like Lost Boys or something from Terminator 2 or, you know, this and that. And he is one of the best things he's ever, I mean, he says it's one of the best things he's ever done. And he's a genius. The music he made for this movie is amazing.
Yeah. You got to collaborate with a lot of talented musicians.
Well, you're talented too, so they get to cooperate with you. I mean, it works both ways.
Ah, thank you.
Okay. Before I let you go, I do ask everybody a few fun questions at the end. All right. So it's your first time on the show. Everybody gets the first same question first. I need your favorite film.
I'll say Taxi Driver.
Favorite film?
Yeah.
Ooh, oh my gosh, it's so hard. Probably anything Wes Anderson. I'm going to go with Moonrise Kingdom today.
Okay. Question two is a little bit harder, but you can think about it. Name one film that's underrated more people should watch.
Oh my gosh.
Just off the top of my head, I would say The Friends of Eddie Coyle with Robert Mitchum.
And I'm going to say anything Wes Anderson. I don't know enough people that know him.
I've seen every Wes Anderson film. I have not seen this film, but I've seen all Wes Anderson films.
Love it.
We know your film is available on Tubi. At least that's where I saw it. Is there other places you like to promote at this time?
For Streets of Vengeance, I mean, it is available if you want to buy the Blu-ray or DVD on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, you know, if you want to buy it, it has a lot of extra features, audio commentary, behind-the-scenes featurettes, making-of documentary, all that kind of stuff. But if you just want to watch it, just stream it. Of course, we're on Tubi, we're on Amazon Prime, Zumo, Plex, and I think we're going to be on the Roku channel. I saw that it was delivered. I don't know when it's coming out yet. Because we went through Film Hub for the distribution, for our digital distribution. So those are the main platforms. But Tubi's the best. I mean, everyone loves Tubi.
Angie, I think you forgot to mention your website that people might want to check out.
Our website?
Oh, yeah, that would be...
Huh?
Yeah, just our social medias.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, yeah, I mean, you can't see the movie there. But yes, we're on Instagram, AAP Films, AAP Productions on Facebook, Paul Ragsdale, if you want to hit me up, talk movies, anything like that.
And we will talk to you all day.
Yeah, I'll bug you and then tell me to stop or block me or something.
Well, you haven't bugged me yet, so I guess I'm okay.
Yeah.
So
now on that, we'll start.
Yeah, all good. Thank you for your time. Have a great evening. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.